Hello and welcome. This is IdeaGen TV. Today for our Power Chat, we have Dr. Siddhant Gupta, Director of Incubation at Microsoft, heading it up. Welcome, Siddhant.
Hey, thank you, Cooper. Great to be here again. You know, this is awesome. And today, I'll actually be having a Power Chat with a friend and a colleague I've known for almost 10 years now, Nick Villar. He's the Principal Hardware Architect at Microsoft, a researcher, an academic, humanitarian, and he's done a lot, and a great leader. And one of the biggest properties he has is being super humble, an amazing human being. So welcome, Nick. Good morning and welcome. Thank you for taking the time to chat with us on IdeaGen TV.
It's so exciting to be here. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So Nick, I wanted to dive in. And so I've known you since I was a young graduate student, and you were already the rock star in our academic community. It's almost, I think, 11 years now. I think 2009 is first mm-hmm. when I met you. And I've always been super impressed with kind of your research, your application of technology to really interesting problems. So one of the themes I have noticed in your work is you're always working on humanitarian problems. Like, you're always trying to figure out how to apply some part of your research, technology, or skill set to a problem that's larger than all of us. So tell me a little bit about, is that really a theme, or am I just perceiving it that way? And if it is, kind of what got you interested in kind of being altruistic here, so to say?
That's a really interesting observation. You know, I think I've always been interested in technology, fascinated by it. But really, it's that point where technology meets humans that is fascinating to me. The interaction that happens, the moment that people get a technology in their hands and are able to use it, to misuse it, to appropriate it in different ways, to let them, you know, use it as a tool to allow them to achieve the things that they want to achieve. It's that interaction that I've always been really fascinated by, and I think in my career in technology, I think I've always gravitated to domains where humans are at the center of the picture. Technology is the enabling factor, but it's really the impact that they create in someone's life that is fascinating to me, that moment, that effect. So I guess I've been at Microsoft Research almost as long as we've known each other, for about 12 years now. And I think during that time I had the opportunity to work with a really exciting mixture of people, you know, a very multidisciplinary group, great engineers, great scientists, amazing makers of things, but also, social scientists, psychologists, ethnographers, people that have, always take a very human centric view of the world, and I think that particular combination has really influenced my outlook.
Yeah, that's amazing that you've been putting humans at the center, and as at least I noticed, you've always gravitated towards humanitarian problems. And more recently, like over the past 5 years, if I see in some of your really pioneering work in, you know, helping kids, what are some of the societal problems that have bugged you and are top of mind right now? Like, kind of, what are you thinking about the state of the world and where you want to kind of change that with some of your application of research and technology? So are there problems that bug you or have bugged you, something you want to share?
I mean, I always... I'm always fascinated by when you identify an underserved community. And technology is such a powerful lever. And, you know, I found a couple of times in my career that just even a small application of technology in the right way can have such a big impact in someone's life. And it's interesting. Sometimes it can be a small group of people and you can have a really big impact. Or you can have a small impact for with a large group of people, and sometimes you find problems where you know you can there's the potential to have a big impact with a large group of people, and those are the ones that are really fascinated. And I'd love to talk to you about a little bit more about how some of the problems have fitted in those yeah. different categories, but. I guess one of the most interesting, well, an interesting example of that was a few years ago, Cecily Morrison, a colleague of mine, I used to work in the Cambridge UK lab, she was very involved in the community with working community with sight impaired. And low vision children. Her own son was born blind. So she was very active in this community, and organized a couple of did things like organize technology workshops to engage children who are blind or low vision to start to play with technology. And she organized a really fascinating one where they were doing a little circuit design, taking things like Arduino and building like simple circuits around them. And the physical part of it was okay. And then it came time to program these things. And a lot of times there was this very huge apparent gap that there weren't any tools. The kids were saying, oh, we want to program these things. We have these ideas that we want them to do, but there weren't any tools to allow them to do that.
So just to clarify, these kids who were visually impaired were building circuits, and they had the tactical feel to do that. But you're saying the wall they hit was, you put it together, but now it doesn't do anything because you cannot really program it.
Exactly. Okay. They were coming up with all these ideas of what they wanted to do, and it would be, this is a really great inventions, this is a sensor, it has a light sensor, and this allows me to know whether there is a window in the room, right? Yeah. Like, I want to know whether there's a window in the room, and I can use this light sensor, and it'll give me some feedback. I just need to, make the little glue logic, they could feel, do the breadboard, the delicate physical operations perfectly, but it was giving it the little bit of intelligence that glued it all together. And that was a big chasm. And looking back, it became apparent that the problem was really widespread. In the UK, over the last few years, computer science has become part of the curriculum, which is really exciting. But it does mean that there were all these children that were being excluded mm-hmm. from participating in that because the same thing that we experienced in the workshop, they were experiencing at a nationwide level. There just weren't any tools to teach kids how to program because a lot of the metaphors that we use and the tools are very visual when teaching someone programming. So there's tools like Scratch, where you on screen you drag and drop blocks and each block represents yep. a line of code or a statement and you click them together like Lego. And it's a very visual metaphor, or even when we talk about text-based coding, it is very, very, very visual. Indentation is meaningful. The way that things align. It's all designed to. It's very graphical, and things like screen readers don't really work. It's already so abstract what you're trying to convey, and without kind of these simplifications and these abstractions, visual abstractions, it's very hard to build up that fundamental learning. Saying that, you know, there are programming and computer science is an amazing career for someone that is visually impaired. You know, I've worked with some incredible programmers at Microsoft that have little or no vision, but it's really incredible how they got there, because that initial learning how to code, like, it's so hard. You need to be a really extraordinary individual, I feel like, to be able to overcome those first hurdles. So this is where we started the discussion with Cecily. It's like, maybe there is something that we could do to create an on-ramp to facilitate those first few steps of learning to learn the fundamentals of computer science, the computational thinking, and build up those first layers of abstraction that then will lead to someone to be able to, you know, become a programmer. So one of the things I've always been really fascinated by is physical interaction with technology. You know, in the academic world, it's sometimes called the tangible user interfaces, or ubiquitous interfaces. The idea that you can interact with a computer system by manipulating physical devices, rather than just touching, tapping on a screen or using a keyboard or a mouse. This seemed like a particularly a lot of the kind of techniques and technologies that we have developed. I find it really fascinating to see, well, can we create a physical programming language, something that a programming language that where you write code by clicking together physical objects, by linking things, by connecting things together, rather than writing text on the screen or dragging graphical blocks and drawing lines.
Yeah. So in some ways, you took the Scratch programming language, where you drag and drop blocks on a screen, which are color coded. So for a visual person, it's really easy to grasp. Mm-hmm. And you said, what would be the physical manifestation of that concept, mm-hmm. that's more tactile than visual?
Exactly. And that was our starting point. It's actually funny that you mentioned that, because that was exactly the image that I went into it. And I thought, oh, this is going to be easy. We're going to go in and we're going to make just physical versions of those blocks on the screen. We ended up taking a very human centric approach to this problem. And what we ended up doing was Cecily put together a team of young inventors, kids who had a range of a visual ability from no vision to low vision to completely sighted. And and we called them our invention team. And they would come in every week to our lab, and we started prototyping. And we started a brainstorming and prototyping and putting different things in front of them, and, you know, said, well, what if, you know, for our first things, like, we had this idea, okay, we're just going to make them like blocks, like you see on the screen, and then we're going to, and they're going to stamp together like magnets. And then, you know, when you assemble a program, each block is going to represent a statement in the program, and to connect them, you're going to stamp them together, and they're going to form these stacks, and they're going to be somehow tactile. It's going to be straightforward. And so quickly, we found out that was a terrible idea, especially magnets were a terrible idea. You know, when you're making a program, it's a very kind of intentional process. Having magnets that are snapping when you don't intend them to is not great. You know, sometimes you need to have someone else check your work. So they were passing the program or explaining it to someone else. You know, you're passing your construction to a colleague or to a peer or to a teacher. sometimes these things fall and magnets would just come apart and then your program would be scattered all over the floor. So we learned a lot of things like that. What particular features work, like how do you convey that this one is different from this one, but they're all similar or related? How can we use texture? What is the right size and scale to do something? As a technologist, I guess we always try to make things small and efficient and tiny. And we quickly learned that it was really important for people to be able to work together. So whereas the objects that we first designed were really small, so we thought, it'd be great. You can stack a lot of you can make really big programs because the individual pieces will be small, and then you'll have them all on the table. But more important than that was to be able to do pair programming, which is in the sense that two kids would be learning together, and they would be explaining to each other and working together on the same program. So it was important that they were able to, put both their hands on an object and understand it together. So the scale of everything ended up being dictated, by everything are objects that are, the size of two small hands.
That's really fascinating. And pair, so just for our audience, pair programming is a term where two programmers would sit together, check each other's work, but collaboratively try and solve a problem.
Right.
So in this instance, since it's a physical manifestation of a digital concept, you're saying it needs to be big enough so both the people involved could understand it simultaneously.
Exactly.
So no more can it be small pieces. So you ended up having something a little bit larger.
A little bit larger. And just like that, there were hundreds of design decisions that were, completely upended. It was such a fascinating experience for me to go in. I was really humbled, in the sense that, we came in with some hubris of like, this is how it's done. And
right.
It's really taught us, they invented it as much as the solution, as much as we did. It was a very, very collaborative thing. And the result is so different from what any of us could have imagined going in.
And so this is, you called it the code jumper. And as I understand it, Microsoft developed it to the point where we handed it off to a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
And so now is that nonprofit taking over those designs and those artifacts and producing it for visually impaired children?